So it's four in 3 days, which is exciting. And the person that I'm going to have speak for me tonight, I picked her because she's one of my best friends. And if there was a person that I could label most beneficial to this last year in my sobriety, it would be her. And as awesome as my sponsor is, I need road dogs. I need people that I can go to talk about my sponsor to, or, you know, whatever. And she's been there for me a lot, and in ways that other people just haven't, you know. And unlike most people that I'm friends with, her message from the podium and in, you know, our couch sessions and things like that go to my heart. And I hear her in a way that I don't hear everyone. So with that, before I start crying, I'll give you Megan.
I'm Megan. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
I'm nervous, but, you know, hey, it's part of it when you're as self-centered as I am. My sobriety date is 11/24/2010. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. Just to get that formality out of the way, this is my home group. Yay. Nikki is many, 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 many things to me, but I often find myself looking at her like a sister. And along the years of being in and out of this program, which you'll hear about in a second, you know, you meet a lot of people, and very few people do I let into my heart the way that I've let her. And it's just been an amazing journey to go back and forth. There's days when she carries me, and I think days when I carry her. And I think that's, you know, kind of the beauty of having a true friend in this program, is we don't typically have bad days at the same time. Sometimes we do, and we just have complete, we call them couch sessions, when we sit and we give each other therapy, you know, amateur therapy sessions for free, and it's probably not a whole lot of good information comes out of it, but it's fun nonetheless. And back when I was a smoker, we would go through quite a bit of cigarettes. So I don't think she has as much fun now that I complain about the smell, but, you know, whatever. I still love her. And the truth is, you know, she gives me more than I think she realizes, and it's just, I see so much of myself in her that it's not even funny. So I think that's why we have the ability to carry a message back and forth, is because, you know, we're all alike. We all share this inability to control and enjoy our drinking, but sometimes you are more like certain alcoholics than others, and we are definitely cut from the same cloth, so to speak. So anyway, Nikki has, just one more thing about her. She has made me as angry as about anyone has sober. Like, I've actually wanted to physically punch her, like I stopped myself, like crying mad. But she's also made me so happy that I've cried, and that's a true sister to me. Like, even when we're angry at each other, she's the person, she's one of my go-to people. Like, I've called her when I've wanted to drink so bad that I knew, I went to my bed and I sat on my bed and I called her and I said, if I leave my bed, I'm going to leave my bedroom. And if I leave my bedroom, I'm going to leave my apartment. And if I leave my apartment, I'm going to the liquor store. And I called her even when I was mad at her, and she was mad at me, and she picked up the phone. And one of the assets, if you don't know Nikki, is she has the unique ability to make a newcomer feel welcome. And she has the unique ability to make anybody feel a part of. And, you know, I admire that, because I'm kind of not always the most warm, friendly person, I know. But so just, she's awesome. So if you don't know her, get to know her. And if you think you know her, and you just give her another chance. Sorry. Love you. Mean it. So anyway, how I got here in Tampa, Florida today and say all these great things and funny things. I was born in Eastern Kentucky. If you can't tell, my accent has worn off a little, believe it or not. I am 1984, so if you can do the math, then, you know, you've probably been here a couple 24 hours. I'm not going to go into it. I had my first drink at age, I think, 13. I don't know. It's a little fuzzy, but I do know that the first time I drank, I found handled vodka bottle over the refrigerator. Had been there a while. Me and my girlfriend from cheerleading, we got into it. And the first night, I drank so hard, so much, so fast that I threw up. I blacked out, and I woke up, and I had busted blood vessels in my eyes. Like, that's my first memory of drinking. And I say that just because, start off the bat, because that's how I drink. Like, you know, I tried the whole sippy thing and to try to be like a lady and to look all presentable, and it just was not my deal. Like, you know, that whole control and enjoy, I never got that. Like, when I controlled it, it was boring. Like, and when I enjoyed it, it was a mess. I was not a beer drinker, so I thought that automatically made me not alcoholic. The only time I drank beer is when a funnel was attached to it, or I was doing a keg stand. Because, you know, where I am from Kentucky, we didn't have field parties, we had mountain parties on top of strip club. It's not strip club, strip jobs. Woo! Oh, where that came. That was later. Anyway, wow. Didn't know that was coming out. Anyway, I pray before I speak, so I'm just going to trust that what comes out is what's supposed to come out. And this is God's story, not mine. So if I offend you, you know, you say your prayers and take it up with the big guy. That being said, you know, I was raised in a house. I wasn't raised to be, you know, a redneck hoodlum. I wasn't raised to be the type of girl that, like, you know, did the things that I ended up doing. In a very short time after I started drinking, like, I was raised to be a straight-A student. I was raised to entertain governors, to sit in the governor's box at the Kentucky Derby. Like, that's what I was raised to do. But that's not what alcohol and alcoholism did to me. It took away everything that I loved. Like, I was cheerleader. I was a tumbler. I was straight-A student. I have met countless political figures that would probably impress people. Like, you know, and I'm just not saying that to say that I was better or anything. Just saying, like, alcoholism does not discriminate. So from the first time I drank, you would think I had such a bad experience that I would go, ooh, this is not a good idea. You probably shouldn't do that. And I didn't for a while. But whenever I got a chance again to drink, I did. And, you know, I could not, you know, I thought, well, I just won't drink vodka. So I drank peppermint schnapps, I think, was the next thing that I drank. That wasn't a good experience either. And then I tried a fuzzy navel, and that wasn't a good experience. I'm like, no matter what I did, I couldn't find that right fix. And so, you know, I tried Zimas, and I would put, like, little Jolly Ranchers in it. And found Smirnoff ice drinks. Okay, bear with me. I found that if I took a couple shots of Smirnoff and then sipped on the Smirnoff ice drinks, that I could keep it at a level to where I was, like, schwasted but not puking. Like, that's where I wanted to stay. Like, I didn't want to be, like, passed out, because that's not fun. Like, nobody wants to be throwing up all the time. That's not a good look. But I wanted to be out of it. Like, I didn't want to be mildly buzzed. I wanted to be highly intoxicated. So I tried to figure out that perfect combination where I didn't have to drink beer, because that just was disgusting, in my opinion. But moonshine made me wild. We didn't like that. We figured that out. And apparently red liquor made me want to fight, because I am a little feisty. So, you know, that was what my, and then I found out relatively quickly that my mom could tell when I'd been drinking. And I grew up in a part of the country where other substances happened. And, you know, I would love to sit here and tell you that's not a part of my story. And I respect and love Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a keeper of the traditions. But the reason I bring this up is because I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time at age 18 in a treatment center in Atlanta, Georgia. I'd been 18 years old living with a 48-year-old drug dealer, drinking, doing stuff that would help me drink more, and doing a bunch of other stuff that I had become physically dependent upon. And when I got dropped off in treatment, you know, they told me I was an alcoholic and I needed to go to meetings and that I was a polysubstance abuser, you know, whatever that means. And I'm like, okay, I'm just, whatever, like, my life's unmanageable. I'm just trying to get my parents off my back. And they told me if I went to treatment, they would let me have my allowance and the car back and all that, like, whatever. And so I went to the meetings, and they took us all to AA, mostly to AA meetings. And so the only thing I could figure is if I replaced the word alcohol with drugs, then I could wrap my brain around it, because I hadn't had a whole lot of consequences from straight alcohol. I could see where my life had been unmanageable, but I really hadn't had, if you looked at the, you know, in the big book when it talks about real alcoholic, hard drinker, like, I couldn't see that with alcohol. I could see when you mixed it all together how it was a problem, but I hadn't had it with alcohol. And the reason I'm telling you this is because it's my story, and it is what it is. So, you know, I worked the steps, and I did the thing, and I did the deal, and I was able to stay sober for a while. couple years, actually. Got involved in Icky Paw bid for Atlanta bid for Icky Paw. Did that, you know, had started getting my life together, like lived in Atlanta, was like having a good time. The difference is I didn't change my life. I was 18 when I got sober. Like I turned 21 sober. I kept running in the clubs. Like I failed to enlarge and grow spiritually. Like I didn't believe that I needed a God. There were some things, but the biggest thing is I never accepted my alcoholism. In the back of my head, I always thought, one day I'll probably be able to drink as long as I don't touch the other stuff. And so the day came when I left my home group, I had chaired a meeting, and I went to some friend's house that drank, and I drank a wine cooler. And from that day, it was off to the races. And within 3 months, I came like a little scared girl with my tail between my legs, went, okay, I need to go back to treatment. And I went back to treatment and, you know, got sober again. When I got sober again, it, you know, the relapse had scared me. So, you know, fear couldn't keep me sober. The whole knowing the big book inside and out, being active in Alcoholics Anonymous couldn't keep me sober. So, you know, I stayed, worked the steps again, like had some type of like, got some good stuff back, stayed sober for about 3 years, like got my real estate license, started making some money, like got the boy, like thought I was getting married. Things didn't work out the way I thought they would because I found out the boy was married already, like... wasn't a good look. Like, that's what happened. It is what it is. I no longer hate him. I don't like him, but I don't hate him. So, fast forward. I'd always had in the back of my head, too, that when I relapsed, because I'd seen it happen, I'd had it happen before. When I'd relapsed, I came back as soon as things got bad. You know, I just came back. And when things got bad, I couldn't come back. I was stuck out there for a year and a half. And in that year and a half, things happened. A lot of bad things happened. Things that I've had to seek outside help for happened. And things that I have a hard time looking people in the eye about happened. And things that, like, I'm still cleaning up with living amends happened. And some that I've not been able to make amends for have happened. And long story short, because I don't have a whole lot of time, I ended up getting arrested 5 times in 6 weeks. I am now on felony probation. Thank goodness that the judge gave me a long, long, long probation period, so I got adjudication withheld, so that eventually will go off my record if given that I do what is required of me. But I was facing 15 years mandatory minimum. Like, I do things like I start ramming people with cars thinking that is totally justifiable in the middle of a blackout. Like, I call it bumper cars. Like Tawanda, if you've ever watched Fried Green Tomatoes. Any Southern girl knows what I'm talking about. And that wasn't the first time I'd done it. It was just the first time I got caught. So my alcoholism is not pretty. It's not put together. When I came, you know, I'd been in a couple different treatment centers after a year and a half out there. Been to a place in New Jersey for the reluctant to recover. I left there. Like just a bunch of different places. And finally, I knew a guy in... here in Tampa, who I had been in treatment with when I was 18, and he was worked in a treatment center here, and I ended up in Tampa because I knew that relationship with that guy that I met when I was sober that was married. I couldn't leave. It got physically violent, like a hammer to the head was involved at some point. Like, it just got bad. Like, I couldn't leave, and I finally had this moment of clarity that if I got out of Atlanta, maybe I had a fighting chance. And I came to Tampa, and I gave it a shot, and he said, just give me 30 days. And I trusted him enough. This doctor enough to where I was like, okay, I'll give it 30 days. And then by that time, I went in front of the judge, and the judge was like, hey, you gotta stay. I was like, all right, crap. And so I was nudged by the judge, and people say you have to do it for yourself. I did it to stay out of prison. The cool thing is, by the time I got out of treatment, you know, did I stay sober? No, I smoke spice. I'm a spice girl out of treatment. Like, I'm not advocating it. It's stupid. Like, you know, it hurts people. But the reason I say that is because for a long time I lied about my sobriety date because, you know, I was ashamed to say that I had done that. And so it's important for me to admit that in front of my peers. So it's not something to celebrate or laugh about, even though I make a joke because I'm uncomfortable. Anyway, you know, I got involved in this group up in North Tampa that was highly involved in it's a big book study. That is, they made the big book come alive, and I worked the steps with a guy the first time. Because if a woman would have told me the truth and talked to me the way that a guy did, the way that he did, I would have hit her. because I came in angry. I'd been somebody's punching bag for over a year, and I had also used somebody as a punching bag. Like, you know, I drank to pass out. I drank to black out. I drank to escape. I wanted to die. I just wasn't, I, for whatever reason, wouldn't turn a gun on myself. I just wanted somebody else to do it. And I just was miserable. So I can't tell you exactly what the moment was. I wish I could and wrap it up in a pretty bow and tell you exactly what it is that made my head pop out of my you-know-what. And like, but thank goodness something did. And I finally found a power that greater than myself. And I ran with it. And a lot of people call me rigid, and I love that word sometimes. And a few of you know, you know, I'm giving you a shout-out sideways. But, you know, I consider myself religious today, and I'm not going to go into my what my religion is, because that doesn't matter, and you don't have to be to get this thing. The cool thing is you can be agnostic. I know people that are sober that are atheists, and that's controversial at best, but I happen to be religious, and I found so much peace, and I chase it. I chase it with everything I got, because I find so much peace. I find just as much peace in prayer as I do with helping a new girl, and I find a lot of peace in general service. I know that sounds crazy. Like, going to quarterlies gets me on fire. it does. Like, I go and I hear concepts and tradition workshops, and I get on fire, and I come back, and I'm like, y'all need to learn about this, and you look at me like I have a third eyeball, and I'm like, maybe one girl will get on fire with it. But it works for me. And, you know, I take girls through steps, and some of them stay, and some of them don't. But the truth is, you know, sometimes just picking up the phone for a friend. Working the steps this time was much different. I work them. I just changed sponsors, so I'm doing another inventory, and I'm absolutely thrilled about it. kidding. Actually, I am. You know, I've stopped fighting it, and I'm going to do it, and I am doing it. I actually started it. Point of saying all that is, you know, I've finally seen how the universe kind of takes care of itself, and I pray and I pray and I pray for God to, like, show up in my life, and I get these big blinking red signs, and I still want to keep praying, going, God, show me, God, show me, God, show me, and he shows me, and then I want to argue about it. And that's just the way I work. And I don't know, I'm just very super happy with my life, and I want to complain about some little things and get all wrapped up. I'm dating, which is, I don't know why that, okay, whatever, I'm dating. It's kind of, it's so weird. I've never dated. I've always taken hostages. I've been a serial dater my entire life. I've jumped from three-month relationship to three-month relationship or, like, whatever, and it's absolutely, it brings out every insecurity. It brings out every character defect that one person could possibly have. But I've actually started making it fun. And the cool thing is it just, some people are like, oh, I feel sorry for my single friends. I'm like, don't feel sorry for me. I feel sorry for you. I'm kidding. Not really, but anyway, I actually am having fun. Like, and the cool thing is, like, I had this in my head for a long time that you get sober, you go back to school, you get the job, you get the boy, you get married, you have a baby, and that means you made it. And that's not my story. That's not what my life looks like, and I'm okay with that today. And, you know, if that is your story, congratulations. No insults meant by that. I'm a little off my rocker right now because I'm a nervous wreck. I love everyone here. Even I just love this home group. I hated YPG for a long time, and if you're one of those people, you know what? Keep coming back. I was at a quarterly, and I was sitting and talking to some home group members that actually don't live here anymore, and I was dogging this group about how I didn't like it and blah 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 blah. And somebody walked up to me and was like, "Do you have a sponsor?" And as soon as I said yes, they turned around and walked off. And anyway, and they said, have you ever looked at what you bring rather than what you get from it? And when I do that, when I come to any meeting, especially this meeting, and look at what I bring and, like, look at the person that looks like they feel as uncomfortable as I did when I first started coming, and I reach out and I say hi to them, like, it changes my entire experience at any meeting. I know that, you know, sometimes I look at people and they seem like they got their stuff together, and on the inside I feel like I'm dying. Because I like to judge my insides to other people's outsides. So I think I'm done, even though I haven't got a sign, but I think I'm done. Yeah, so rock on. Congratulations, Nikki.